Stupidity has been presented by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Welcome to a journey inside the soul of one of sports media's brightest minds. A profoundly nuanced odyssey called Stupidity. Hosted by the incomparable Stu Gotts, a man I consider a personal hero and icon of the industry. I want to make no bones about it. There is no Mike Greenberg today without the sensational Stu Gotts providing me the inspiration to chase my dream and challenge myself to be just half as brilliant as he is. Allow me, Mike Greenberg, a man who would probably today be doing traffic in Sioux Falls without Stu Gotts' influence, to welcome you to a truly transcendent sonic experience. This is Stupidity.
All right, it's all downhill after the Greeny Open. It's the greatest thing about this podcast. It's certainly the greatest thing I think that Greeny's ever done in his entire life. Stanzik, is that fair?
The greatest thing Greeny's ever done?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Probably.
I mean, he nailed it. He absolutely nailed it. You know, I wanted Greeny to be a big part of the podcast and have him on often, but I think we would ruin the Open. So I think we just leave it at that. What do you think?
I'm fine with that.
All right. Well, what episode are we on, by the way? I have
really?
No idea. Yeah, really. I'm telling you, this thing is tearing my family apart. People are jealous. People are upset. They want to know why they haven't been on yet. My days are bleeding together because all I think about, besides the show I do with Levitard, is this damn podcast. I honestly have no idea what episode this is.
It's episode 5.
We have done 5 episodes? I've made it through 5 episodes of Stupidity?
Well, technically 6 if you include that 37-second one you did that we called episode 0.
Right, episode 0, which they paid me $0 to do, and it was a 30-second episode, and it was number 1 on Apple Podcast. We have a real problem here, Stanza, because I'm ready to go. I'm in the chair. I am fired up. And by the way, we have a new Comrex unit, and it has 2 microphones. So for the first time ever, Abby and I could be in the same room. I don't want to get too inside radio, but this is like the Rolls Royce of Comrex units, and it is set up to have 2 microphones. I have 2 microphones hooked up to the thing, and we did this all for Abby. We got this for Abby so her and I could be in the same room to do this together and help our chemistry a bit and our timing a bit. But here's the problem, Stanzik. I have no earthly idea where my wife is. I have no idea, and it was your job to get her this week, not mine.
Why is it my job to find your wife? I don't get it.
Well, you're the executive producer, and I've been telling you this since the day we started. She's going to respond a lot faster to you than she is to me. She does not respond to me, in large part because she hates me, but also because I think she doesn't want to do this podcast.
She lives in the same house as you. She's probably a room away from you right now. Why don't you just ask her what's going on?
Funny that you mentioned that. Very funny, actually, because she is. She's a couple of rooms away from me right now. She just texted me a prepared statement. She has a statement. My wife has sent me. She has sent me via text. She could have walked in the room and set it into a microphone. She could have walked in the room and told me it herself. She has texted me here a couple of rooms away a prepared statement.
Wow. I mean, I guess someone's prepared.
She She's pissed off, man. She is upset. I'm going to read verbatim from this prepared statement, okay?
Okay.
It says, no money, no shoes, no Abby. But please subscribe, rate, and review, and then unsubscribe, and subscribe again, and then rate and review. So that's the statement from my wife, Abby.
Wow. What are we going to do? I mean, I think we have a contractual obligation to have at least 2 wieners.
Is that what you're saying? That when you took this job, you left Golic and Wingo, you were guaranteed, you were promised that on this show every week there'd be 2 wieners?
That's correct.
All right, well, I'll go out and get the biggest wiener I can get. Hey, Dad.
What?
Dad, what do you mean, what? I mean, you've been asking me to do stuff with you forever. Like, ever since Levitard's dad started doing the TV show with Dan, you have been peppering me with, hey, when are we going to do something together? And now we're finally doing something together, and that's the response I get from you?
Yeah, but I didn't know I was going to be a substitute for Abby.
Dad, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, we have had Adam Gase on. We have had, I mean, just a who's who of guests on the first few episodes here on Stupidity. Greeny did the Open. Stanzik, correct me if I'm wrong. The hardest person to pin down, Dad, has been you. It's amazing.
Facts.
Hey, John, when you're in retirement, you get very busy.
Busy doing what, though? What are you even doing?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out.
Listen, a little peek inside. Like, I'm going to peel back the curtain a little bit, all right? We taped the podcast. That's number one, okay? Number two is Stanton. You wanted to do this 3.5 hours ago, did you not?
Yeah, and about 3 days ago, too.
And since the time you asked me to get my dad on, we've been able to reach out to Bob Ryan. We've been able to talk to Scott Van Pelt. The only person we can't pin down is my dad, right?
Or your wife.
But let me ask you a question, John.
Yeah.
Since the producer said 3 days ago, why was I only informed about this last night?
That's a good point.
Now we're really peeling back the curtain.
But I just assumed he's a retired man. He'd always be available. And I'm his son. Like, Dad, you drop whatever the hell it is that you're doing when I ask you to come on this podcast. That's the deal.
I need more than 12 hours lead time.
Totally. Thought he was going to ask for money there.
Well, that too.
That's coming, Stantic. I'm telling you. Because, Dad, Abby's holding out because she released a statement earlier. She wrote, no money, no shoes, no Abby. So, and I'm telling you, it's going to tear the family apart at its seams. It's already doing it. But Stantic, I promise you, after this one performance in which it took us 5 days to find him, I promise you, Stantic, he will be asking for money. Promise you.
You know what? We'll have to wait to see how the Stugatz Army acceptance of me is.
Oh, they're going
to
love it. They're going
to
love it.
If it's very strong, then we might have to sit down and negotiate.
That, I'm proud of you. I am proud of you. I learned from the best. And listen, I'm telling you, the Stugatz Army, Stantic, first off, let's be honest. I'm going to whisper this. My dad's already better than Abby. Stanzik?
I'm not crossing your wife. Get out of here.
Stanzik. Yes or no?
That makes two of us.
Yes or both of you. Yes or no, Stanzik. Is my father already better at this than Abby?
No.
Is he better than me?
Yes.
Attaboy. I have told people for many, many years that there are two reasons I got into this business. One is Mike and the Mad Dog, and we'll get to them in just a second. Just growing up listening to them on Long Island, on WFAN in New York, that's where I got the itch to want to do this. And the second reason, and certainly the more important reason, is because you were such a big sports fan, and you passed that along to me and my brother Eric, and really the discussions that we had at the kitchen table or in the car at dinner, That's the reason, more so than Mike and Chris, that's the reason that I decided I want to do this, because we had such great discussions. Dad, how would you describe that? How would you describe growing up in our house, or, you know, my poor mom having to deal with the three of us? But how would you describe that, Dad?
John, you forgot they had the green couch.
You're right, Dad. I did forget about the green couch. That's probably where we had the most discussions about sports, on that green couch, right?
Well, you know, when we sat at the dinner table, Mom used to feel a little left out because we would be discussing, you know, the best of all times. And she did, you know, some of it, you know, went to her and she understood what we were talking about.
Right.
But for the most part, you know, she knows the names, but she doesn't know the significance of the names.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I felt bad for Mom. I still feel bad for Mom because we're still talking about it. So I don't think many people know this about me, Dad. I was very shy growing up, and so I don't think I spoke too much. I'm not certain I spoke a word until the age of 14. So if I told you at the age of 14... I would have a national radio show and be on TV working for ESPN. Based on what you knew of me at the age of 14, you would have told me what?
No effing way.
Right. So, you know, I just did a podcast this week for Sports Illustrated, and a large part of the conversation was about Mike and the Mad Dog and what kind of influence they had on me. And, you know, and I talked about it, and, you know, it's been
Well, if I can interrupt for a second.
You can.
Please
do.
I think the first time you heard Mike and the Mad Dog,
yep,
was when the two of us were in a car driving somewhere.
Yes.
And the fan had just started in New York. And you asked me, what is this? And I explained to you that it was the start of a new concept in radio broadcasting, mm-hmm, to do 24-hour sports talk. And then I don't know if it was that day or it was certainly within a couple of days after or weeks after that.
Oh, no, Dad, remember correctly, it was right in the car. Like, you were picking me up from practice, and I remember it like it was yesterday. We drove home. We got home. I was asking you on the way home, we were listening together, who are these guys? You told me who they were. I asked if they were making a lot of money. You said yes. And I said, this is something I want to do. And then we got home, you got out of the car, and I stayed in the car, and I listened for another half hour.
That I remember.
So, I mean, they were a big influence on me. There's no question about it. You were a bigger influence on me, but they were certainly a big influence on me. What do you make of Francesa now?
I couldn't listen to him anymore. Because I found out that it was, if you didn't agree with him, especially about the Yankees,
right?
And I'm a Red Sox fan, as you know, and mm-hmm. I never called into the show.
Right.
He just didn't give anyone any other leeway to give their opinion. Now that he's alone and I've stopped listening to him, I don't listen to sports radio as much as I used to,
right.
But I switched over to the local broadcasters in New York on ESPN.
How about that, Stanzik? Do you see what's happening here? He is tearing Francesa a new ass, just ripping him a new one and promoting ESPN all at the same time.
He's got to be angling for something.
Well, this is now when we go back to the negotiation.
There it is.
Dad, I got to tell you, I got to be honest. That was well done by you. So listen, I'm wondering, Dad, when I got started in this business, well, let me do it this way. Did you think I was going to make it in this business?
Did I think you were going to make it? Yeah. Did I think you were going to make it the way you've made it? Mm-hmm. No.
Right.
To be very candid.
That makes two of us. Yeah, that makes two
of us. As you know, when we used to discuss and still do discuss your current show with Dan, I used to tell you that I didn't get it. Now that I, you know, because you're on the show, I listen to it, and I do get it now. It
took you 15 years, but you finally get the show. I'm proud of you.
Well, I'm John. I'm 15 years is probably a little quicker than you would have gotten it.
I still don't get it. Stanzik, I think you'll find this interesting. Just imagine a father turning on the radio every day, not knowing what it is that we're doing, and hearing his son be a pinata on the show, just take a beating from Lebatard on the show. Dad, that didn't sit well with you. Like, and just be let it fly because Dan's going to laugh. He doesn't care. I would guess, my guess is, Stanzik, I want you to guess here first. How do you think my dad felt about Lebatard at the beginning, setting it up the way I just set it up?
Hated him.
Dad, you hated him, didn't you?
No, I didn't hate him because I can tell you very honestly, and you know I've said this to you, I thought Dan was being disrespectful to you.
Right.
But it wasn't hate, and I thought sometimes he piled on.
But, Dad, now you know, but now you realize what he was doing, because now you know him a little bit, and you know him to be a kind and gentle soul and very loyal, right? So you know all these things about him. But what we were doing, and when you do the show, the type of show that we do, where you're always trying to be funny, occasionally with tone, with delivery, you can, you know, overstep that boundary where funny becomes mean. And so I knew what we were going for, and I knew the times where it felt mean, and I'm certain you felt them as well. But now you know what Dan was really doing was he was positioning me to be, you know, the star of the show, because none of this works. What we do, the chaos around Dan, I can't be a clown unless we have the pillar of journalism sitting right next to me, and I'm annoying the pillar by being a clown, you know?
Well, I understand that, but you remember I'm coming at it from the perspective of a father.
Right.
I understand totally, and as you guys say, I get the show, so I enjoy listening to it now, and, you know, Dan and you really work well together, and some of it works well. Other times, occasionally, you still cross boundaries,
yeah,
but you seem to recover a lot better from it than you used to.
You know what? But here's the thing, that when you're the leader, and Dan's the leader of our show, so when he embraces, hey, make fun of me, mock me, I'm cool with it. Like, I just filled in for him on Highly Questionable, and I sat in the big seat. And I said, hey, it's Stu Gatz, I'm filling in for Dan. I got the big seat today, and by big, I mean wide. And Dan thought that was funny, right? Because I'm calling him fat, right? When he shows an ability to take that, everyone else has to take it by extension. You know?
Well, I think Dan shows an ability to take kidding about himself, which is a very nice quality.
Unlike Francesa. All right, Dad, so part of the reason I wanted to do this podcast, as I said earlier, is I wanted to share this platform with you, with friends, with family, and allow you to speak to some of the people that you admired growing up and still to this day. And one of those people is on the line right now. We love him. It is Bob Ryan, formerly with the Boston Globe, correct?
Well, I'm still affiliated. I can use those last four words because I did retire officially from full-time activity after the London Olympics. My last official act was hitting the send button on the gold medal basketball story in London. But I have been graciously allowed to keep writing on a 2 times a month basis since then. And I write on Sundays. I do not travel. I do not cover. I simply spout off. You can relate to that.
Yes. I definitely can relate to that.
I certainly can relate to that. So this is going to be fun, Dad. So you wanted, listen, I asked for an email, a list of guests, people you wanted to talk to. And you originally, the first email you sent back just read Bob Wright. I got your first request on. Bob is great to us. He's great to me and Dan. He's been great to our show. We love him. And now he's all yours. So, Bob, you have a Red Sox fan here from Mount Vernon, New York. Bob Ryan, I'm speaking to. My dad, Bob Wiener, from Mount Vernon, New York, fell in love with Ted Williams, the splendid splinter. So, Dad, go ahead. The floor is yours. Have a little – it's a couple of mensches cutting it up here, which is what I love. So, Dad, Bob Ryan, go ahead. Talk all the Red Sox you want.
Bob, I can tell you through my experience, especially after 86 – I thought I was going to go through my entire lifetime without seeing a Red Sox World Series, especially, you know, after 86, and John knows he was with me when the ball went through Buckner's legs. But it's been really gratifying since then to be a Red Sox fan. They're a great team to root for. They're exciting. Management, I think, currently, ownership is unbelievable. Because they're willing to spend money. So, and it's got to be great for you since, you know, you covered them for all those years.
Well, that's true. I'm a baseball fan first and foremost. My two formative sports, my foundation sports growing up in Trenton, New Jersey in the 50s were baseball and college basketball. But I got to Boston, I was kind of indifferent to the Red Sox. My allegiance was to the San Francisco Giants. I was a Giant fan from 54 on. Even when they went to San Francisco, I retained my allegiance to them. But in 67, everything turned around for me. And from that was one of the great fan experiences of my life. But as far as this recent run of success goes, you know, you have to backdate. What made 04 exponentially sweeter was 03. Because I was there for that Aaron Boone home run. I was there for that Pedro game. I was there listening to Grady Little try to rationalize leaving Pedro in by saying that it's what he did all year when it was the exact opposite of what he had done all year. And I thought to myself, this is the last game he's ever going to manage for the Red Sox, and it truly was. But, you know, the pain of that was still fresh. Now I'll never forget, and I'm sure you will relate to this very well, they lose game 3 to the Yankees in 04. They're down 19-8 on Saturday night. And here's what I wrote, because I kept hearing, I want the Yankees. They want to play the Yankees. Well, you wanted to play the Yankees. You happy now? And that's what set the tone for game 4. And game 4, ninth inning, and, you know, you all know what happened. From the minute that Millar drew the walk, and here comes Dave Roberts and Bill Miller. And just think, after that, 19-8, walking out of that ballpark in sorrow, 11 nights later, they are sipping the champagne. That is an incredible juxtaposition.
It's amazing. And Bob, I want to tell you, my dad, you would have won one in 86, but here's what happened. So my dad, lifelong Red Sox fan, as you now know, me and my brother are both Met fans. And my dad, 86 game 6, he opened that bottle of champagne. One inning two. But Bob, he opened it up one inning earlier than he should have, and that cost the Red Sox a World Series right there. Blame him, Bob.
Without question, there's a special place in Hades for him now. I was covering the Celtics in Houston. In the exhibition season. And so after the game, I went to a bar that I knew that would have, you know, and I knew from a friend that where to go as quickly as possible. I walk in, I hear it, Henderson's home run. I hear it in the car. I walk into the bar. There's no hardly anybody there. There's a couple, the 20-something couple. And I strike up a conversation and say, when this thing's over, I'm buying. And the ball goes through Buckner's legs, and I turn around and said, I got to go. And I'm serious. That's the gospel truth.
So here's what I want to do, and this is what I love about both of you, because Bob, I swear to you, when I talk to you, I feel like I'm talking to my dad, okay? You guys are that similar, okay? So I'm just going to throw a bunch of names out that I know you both love, and I just want you the first word or two that pops into your head, okay? Dad, I'm going to start with you. Sandy Koufax. Dad, go ahead.
No one bad. The best pitcher I ever saw.
Bob?
Yom Kippur.
All right,
no, seriously.
Yeah.
You asked me what's the first thing I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of Yom Kippur.
All right, a couple more names here, Dad. I'm going to you. Willie Mays, go.
probably the, you know, accepted by me and everyone, or most everyone, is the greatest all-time ball player of all time.
Bob Ryan.
And I actually saw the catch against Vic Wirtz.
That's awesome.
Boyhood idol. Three of them, Ted Kaczynski and Elgin Baylor. But Willie Mays first and foremost, because I'm a baseball guy. And when he came out of the Army in 54, it's when I became a Yankee, a Giant fan. I remember growing up in Trenton, we had the games on Channel 11, Bob. I'm sure you remember. The
sure,
games.
Absolutely.
Giants and Yankees were on Channel 11. The Dodgers were on Channel 9. So we got games to watch. And he was my favorite player. He's still my all-time favorite player.
Dad, Johnny Unitas, go.
Great.
Bob?
Not the greatest, but great.
Sudden death. Sudden death. I think it was a Giants game. I saw the game. Sudden death.
All right, this will be in both your wheelhouses here. Bob Ryan, I'll start with you. Pedro Martinez.
El Primero, the best. The best pitcher, for me, the best pitcher at his prime I've ever seen. 99-2000 Pedro was as good a pitcher as I've ever seen.
That?
So, El Primero. El
Mejor. Well, I will second that and put him on as my starting pitcher all time for the Red Sox.
All right, starting pitcher all time for the Red Sox. Bob, so one pitcher to win a game for the Red Sox. You go Pedro as well?
I'd say Pedro, but boy, I wouldn't mind Louis for one game. Tiant. I'd take Tiant at a heartbeat. If I couldn't have Pedro, I'll take Louis, but I'll take Pedro.
Dad, you love Louis Tiant.
Yes, I did. That's a very good one, but I'll go with Pedro.
No. All right, here we go.
But we both agree on one thing. It wouldn't be Clemens.
Yes, we do agree on that.
I mean, he had a shot in Game 7. He blew it because my dad opened the bottle of champagne. All right, let's go to Carl Yastrzemski. Bob Ryan, you go first. Yaz, go.
Indomitable.
Dad?
Triple crown.
A couple of more here, and we'll get you out of here. Bob Ryan, you first. Larry Bird.
Michelangelo, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Michelangelo.
Dad?
Tough as nails. If I needed a shot, he was the guy who was going to make it.
When he came along, I was 10 years into my writing career at the covering of the NBA, and it was as if I had signed up for an art course, not knowing who the teacher was going to be. In on the first day of school, walked the teacher. It was Michelangelo. Larry Bird was the individual embodiment of everything I thought that I loved about basketball. The passing, the shooting, the rebounding, the thinking. He was, at that point, the quintessence of basketball individual skill. He was the perfect, at that point in my mind. I'd never seen anything personally more encompass all the qualities of basketball in one package the way Larry Bird did.
All right, and I think this is the perfect guy to end on. And, Bob Ryan, we appreciate your time. This has been fantastic. This is the biggest smile I've had on my face since we started doing the podcast, just having my dad speak with Bob Ryan. It's delightful. So this is a perfect one to end on. Dad, I'm going to go to you first because I have a feeling I know what Bob's going to say because I've discussed it with him before. Dad, I will go to you first. Bill Russell.
Mount Rushmore.
Mount Rushmore sports, period? Mount Rushmore?
Yeah, right, Mount Rushmore. Bob, through all the years, like everyone else, you grow up with a starting five of basketball players. All right? And I've moved players off and on. But the only player I will never budge off my all-time NBA team is Bill Russell. Greatest winner I ever saw.
Bob?
Winner, period. That's it. He's the greatest winner and a documented winner in the history of North American sport.
This has been delightful. Thank you, Bob Ryan. Thank you very much. And I want both of you, and so we'll do this again as we get closer to the regular season, but I want to discuss with both of you your all-time Red Sox team, okay? First base, second base, DH. I'm sure you've done it before, Bob. Bob, I am certain you did it on the drive home with your wife just now, right?
I'm going to have to research. I've written it. I don't want to contradict myself. I'm happy for the heads up. I'll check what I'm on record as saying and see if how I still feel.
Dad, you want to say anything to Bob on the way out here?
Bob, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I love reading you, and I'm sorry you're not doing a column more often.
Well, I appreciate that. It's nice to know that discerning readers such as yourself out there makes me feel good.
Stupidity! It is a pleasure. Dare I say an honor to have Scott Van Pelt on Stupidity, and I am certain this is a career highlight for Scott Van Pelt. He's done so much in this business, but being, you know, on Stupidity, number one podcast, Sports and Rec on Apple iTunes, I'm thinking it has to be career highlight for you, Scott.
Yeah, this is it. This is the, from here, it is only the denouement. the falling action. From here, it's all really bottom of the barrel kind of stuff. So I'm going to give you the best I've got, and then that's it.
All right. Well, listen, that's all I can ask for. That's all I ask is give me the best.
Leave it
you
on
have.
The field. Right?
Yes, yes. Leave everything on the field today if you can, okay?
You got it.
And listen, I got a big, big problem. And Stanzik, we have a big problem because the star of this show, I'm guessing that Scott said yes to doing this interview because he wanted to speak to my wife, not speak to me. She's holding out, Scott. She is, we have done five episodes. We are number one, sports and rec. We were number one overall. She's not getting paid, hasn't been paid a dime. She's not even getting a pair of shoes out of this. And so she is holding out. And I happen to think that she's right. How about you?
Well, yeah. I mean, if mom ain't happy, nobody's happy, right? Isn't that what they say?
Yes. It's been interesting.
Who do we have to speak to about this? Because I'm a man of massive influence around the – actually, I have no pull at all. We sit in a small room by ourselves. They don't even know we're there. So I don't think I can help you.
I think you could, actually. But who does have the great – because if it's not you, then who is it? Who has the most amount of pull in terms of talent at ESPN? Is it Lebatard? Is it Van Pelt? Who is it? Stephen A.?
Yeah, Lebatard. Lebatard, anybody that isn't in the building, like Lebatard, Tony and Mike, like you guys that aren't in, you know, on campus, I feel like you guys can do – anything you want, you know, because there's nobody there to come in and kind of give you that, like, that look or the eye roll or sort of make suggestions. And we're lucky too, because like at midnight everyone's at home asleep. I mean, I could be on the show nude and no one would know. So, but I feel like you guys have as much juice as anybody, clearly.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, listen, people come down to visit us and they're amazed by the work environment down here on South Beach at the Clevelander Hotel, and they call it the Wild Wild West of ESPN.
I say this, I mean, look, we goof around a lot when we talk, but I mean, in all sincerity, I envy that because you guys have created the perfect space where the entire sort of aesthetic of who you guys are is untouched, and that's the beauty of why everything you guys do seems to turn to gold.
I appreciate that. I would like you to try SportsCenter at night naked, just to see if anyone's paying attention.
No, just to see if
any of the suits are paying attention.
No, it's I'm 6'6", and like a lot of parts of my body don't see a lot of sun, so it's like, you know, I'm cut like Ned Beatty. It's a horror show. No one wants that.
I understand. Listen, sometimes Dan and I wonder if anyone is paying attention because we had the whole fiasco with the LeBron billboards that we put up in Akron and around the area. And Dan and I talked about it on air, what we were going to do, the whole execution, the plan, everything. And it was more than just billboards. We talked about it for a week. No one said anything until we actually put up the billboards. Like, so Dan and I were talking, right? It's like, hey, we told you we were doing this. We've been talking about it for a week. No one's listening up there.
Right, what it's the old line, like where it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. And in a sense, you were kind of asking for permission by talking about it. And when no one said no, then to me, that's a tacit yes. I feel like you guys did nothing wrong there.
Scott Van Pelt with us here on Stupidity. Listen, it's been amazing because I'm a big fan of yours, as you know. And I've been watching. So when you took over the Midnight Sports Center, I was saying to myself, how is someone going to make SportsCenter different? It seemed to me nearly impossible at the time, but you've been able to do it, and I've been very impressed. And I think what really helps your show stand out, besides the fact that you're awesome, is a couple of things. You don't take yourselves too seriously, and by yourselves I mean you and Stanford Steve. And I think Stanford Steve, now this is interesting because you deserve most of the credit, but I do think Stanford Steve just being there, it comforts you. You have him kind of commenting throughout the show, which I think is hilarious, and he's usually on point with whatever he's saying. I think that dynamic, it's almost like a radio dynamic of having your executive producer also kind of talking you through the show and talking us through the show and coming in with funny and snide comments, I think that's what makes it stand out. Do you agree?
I agree. I agree. And first of all, thank you. I appreciate you, and you and Dan have been kind, and whenever I come on with you all, you guys are always very nice about what it is we're doing. And I mean, you're right. I don't take it seriously because look at what we're doing. I mean, I'm a waiter in a restaurant. I'm on at midnight, and all I'm doing is bringing you the results of things other people did. So we get the chance to talk about it and frame it with what's relevant about it, what's not, what's silly, what can we make fun of. But as for Steve, you're 1,000% right. And when we were going to move over from radio to TV, And they gave me really the green light to take some of the elements that I think worked when it was me and Russillo on radio and bring them to that space at midnight. I give them the credit for allowing me the latitude to do it differently. But I said to them, look, there's a non-negotiable thing here. Steve's got to come with me. And their question was, well, what does he do? And I said, I don't know. He's just going to be Steve.
Right.
And in the same way that you know, you and Dan and your entire show group, everyone has a role that is hugely significant. And without any one of those people, it wouldn't be the same. My show is not close to the same when Steve's not there. Part of it is him being a world-class ball buster. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it that way on this podcast. Chop buster, whatever.
Ball buster was fine. You said it perfectly. That's
okay.
Fine.
Well, he's there. He's world-class at that. And Lord knows, I just need somebody there to govern me to make sure I'm not ever getting out of my lane. So he could be like, hey, wait a minute. Calm down there, big boy. And he's a brilliant observer of sports. He knows more than anybody, has this incredible frame of reference, and his ratio, much like you, his ratio of funny things said to things said is incredibly high. So, I'm out there doing, talking, blah, blah, blah. The show might be fine with me, but it's only going to ever be really good when he's there. So I completely agree with you.
You know, the other thing, Scott, is when the executives ask you, hey, what does Stanford Steve do? He comforts you. I don't think people realize how, unless you've done it, unless you've been on the air, how important it is just to have a familiar face, someone who knows you, knows your likes, knows your dislikes, knows when you're happy, knows when you're upset, knows the notes that you want to hit. That's hugely important. It really is.
And he's an audience, too. I mean, you know, if you hear him giggling at something that's, because so much of what we do is, it's like a recipe, right? Like, my grandma was an amazing cook, and she'd have a recipe, which is sort of like the rundown to the show. But she'd just take a handful of flour and chuck it on the counter. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
She cooked, like, by feel. And a show is the same way. You got an idea of what you're going to do, but then stuff just kind of happens, and you're winging it. And when he's giggling, or I hear him laughing, or he weighs in with a line, comfort is exactly what it is. And it's just more fun.
Yeah.
Look, I'm sitting out there by myself in this massive studio. It's like being in a rowboat in the middle of the ocean, and just him being over there,
yes,
you know, with a line or a thought or a comment. I mean, it is more important than anyone could understand. You say it exactly right. I think having done it, you get it. But unless you have, you'd be like, well, what's the big deal? It's I can't tell you how big a deal it is. It's bigger than you could possibly know.
So, I mean, listen, you know, I'm greedy and selfish. And so I've noticed there are times where Stanford Steve is not there. And you're right. The show for the keen observer there, the show is, you're great. The show's not the same. I'm just tossing my hat in. Like, hey, if you need someone to fill in for Stanford Steve every now and then, I could be available, Scott. I could be.
Well, let me ask you this, let me start and work my way backwards. Okay. Done. That's easy. But where are we with, like, cheating on Dan? Because I have to defer to Dan, and I don't want to feel like I'm making eyes at his partner in crime. I don't want
right.
to do that.
Listen, he's used to it by now. I mean, if I come up there and do the show with you, it won't be the first time I've cheated on him. Let's put it that way, okay?
What's the thing? You kind of, let's be honest, you guys, you kind of flirt with everybody. So, like, I don't feel special. Like, I just feel like you're kind of a little bit of a media slut.
A little bit of a media slut? Are you kidding?
Kind of a lot of one. I'm just trying to be respectful. It's stupidity. I'm trying to defer to the host here.
Oh, that is so great. Stanford Steve is fantastic. But yes, I would love that opportunity. I'll come up and I'll sit in for him one day, and I think we'll have
a sit in with. I mean, hell, let's just make it completely off the rails hour. Who cares? It's 1 a.m. as we've already established. The suits are asleep. They're not paying attention. We can do whatever the hell we want.
Done. And I will do it naked. You might not, but I will. So listen, we share a passion, a love for the game of golf. And so I'm a bit concerned, Scott. I wonder where you are with this, because last year, I remember talking to you about it on our show. You know, we were just happy if Tiger was in the final group of a major, contending for a major. And now, so that was, we didn't care if he won. We were just happy that he was in contention. And now I feel like, because we've seen him in contention, he's playing better golf, obviously. Now I feel like there are expectations with Tiger, and we're going to be let down if he doesn't win a major. Where are you with Tiger right now?
The win at East Lake, I think, represented a massive moment for him. I mean, a guy that had, you know, that has won as often as he has, to get back and do that again, given, you know, and what number comeback is this? I mean, but this is the first one with a back that's been fused together. So
right.
I think that was a monstrous check mark in his own mind to know, all right, I'm good enough against the best in the world. I'm playing with Rory that day, and he was better. Demonstrably better, and that erased maybe the memory of having the lead on the back nine at Carnoustie and not winning. So I get what you're asking, and the thing I'd say is, and you know this from watching the sport, is it's hard to win. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at how many times, particularly in majors, a guy has a lead on the last day, and it's not even a matter of melting. It's just hard to manage to stay upright. And so, you know, you got so many Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Thomas, and, you know, and on and on and on and on, much less a Molinari who beat him at the British last year, or a Koepka who seems to always play his best in the majors. You got to beat so many people now who believe they can do it because they have. So the weight of expectation, I mean, he's dealt with that his entire career. I'd say this will be the best shot he probably has, simply because Augusta, Pebble, Bethpage are places where he's won, and that's where three of the four majors are. The Open is at Royal Portrush. Nobody knows anything about that as far as a major. They never played it there. So you got three of the four chances of places where he's already won. So does that give him expectation? In his own mind, I think, yeah, he already knows what it feels like to do it. So I guess this is kind of a long, meandering answer I think his expectations now are way different than they were a year ago, just because he won at Eastlake against that field, and because in two majors he was right there in the mix. And he knows, if I'm there enough, you know, I might get one kind of by default. So I really believe that he can win another major. I don't think he can catch Jack, but at this point, winning another major in some ways would almost be enough. And I said that with you and Dan, that the way we count now, one equals five anyway, right?
Right.
If he wins that one, we'll be like, whatever, that's enough. We're good.
No, it's kind of like Brady. I say any Super Bowl he wins past the age of 40 should count as two. I mean, honestly.
I agree. if you win someone with a fused back after all the garbage he's been through, I mean, admittedly, a lot of it's self-inflicted. I mean, you know, our accounting is going to be favorable to him.
All right, so I want to ask you some quick golf questions. Give me the I'm going to ask your dream foursome in a second, so you have time to think about it. But give me, because you're a big time celebrity. I mean, you're Scott Van Pelt.
Yeah,
you've covered the Masters.
Sure.
I mean, you know, SportsCenter at Night, everything. Give me the best foursome you've ever played in.
It's mostly just buddies. I'm sorry. This is incredibly disappointing.
No, it's not. And listen, golf is more fun with the buddies. It is. And no, I'm not disappointed at all. In fact, I'm happy to hear you're just like me. Like, I'd prefer playing golf by myself, to be honest with you.
Right, because because the solitude of it is actually, I mean, I enjoy it, but like, and I've said this before, but I'll say it here, like, my favorite golf course in the world, and this is no BS, my favorite place in the world to play golf is a par 3 course in Lewis, Delaware, called the Midway Par 3. You hit off mats. Me and my buddies play there every summer, and it is, like, if you told me tomorrow, like, it's over, you're done, you never can play golf again, or it's the end, you're done, it's, you're checking out, you get one more round of golf, I'd say meet me at Midway and we'll play all day. That's 100% true.
I love that answer. With your three best friends, of course. Not like friends, like college friends, high school friends, friends from growing up.
Oh, yeah,
right?
No, like, yeah. My boys from school. And we go, and like, it's however many show up. This year was like 12, and it's, you know, it's like an all-day thing. And, you know, sure, there's some beers involved, and you play, and it's, you know, added up, bet on everything. And that's, to me, those are the most, to me, that's the beauty of the game. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be, like, you know, some top 100 course. And if it is, that's great, too. That's a fine answer. I'm just saying, for me, that's what it is.
All right, so give me the dream foursome. Give me, Scott Van Pelt can choose three people to play golf with. Who is Scott Van Pelt choosing?
This is an answer I've given before, but it's absolutely as genuine an answer as I can give you in this conversation.
Okay.
My dad, my grandpa, my stepfather all passed away young, or at least young for me, and none of them really played. So if I can wave a magic wand and I can meet them on the first tee, we would have a lot to catch up on, and they suck at golf, so it would take forever. So like, three guys that never got to see my life kind of play out, that'd be the dream. But I mean, if you want to talk about just, you know, in the golf world, I think it'd be hard to talk. You got to have Ernie Els, because Ernie would make sure there was a drink cart with you.
Right.
He's one of the all-time gems in history.
Right.
I think you need Arnold Palmer just because he's, you know, the king's the king.
Yeah.
And then give me an old-timey guy. Give me like a Bobby Jones, just so we can talk about like what it was like to play golf with a stick and a rolled up sock. You know, played with back in the day.
So you want Bobby Jones playing with Bobby Jones's equipment from back in the day?
There you go. So give me a guy from back in the day. Give me Arnold Palmer. You get a bunch of errors, and you get Ernie Els in the mix because he's one of the true gems in the world. So that'll be my golf foursome. But the dream foursome would be the three guys I mentioned, the family members that sadly left me too soon.
Scott, I love that answer because I. As my dad gets older, I cherish each round that I play with him. We play often, and I cherish each one more and more with each passing day.
You got to, and you know what it is, man. It's like, and I got little sons because I got married late. And at some point, if they want to play, I hope they do. I want to just bum around with them and just, you know what it is.
Yep.
To me, there's nothing like the late afternoon sun, and whether you're driving or walking, I don't care. But just that time and a good shot, a laugh, a joke, or whatever. Like those moments are the kind of pictures you have in your brain when you close your eyes. Like I always tell my wife, like put your phone down, just take the picture in your mind, you know, because it lives longer there. That's what those times with your dad on the golf course are about.
I'll be enjoying one of those times right after you and I are done here. And by the way, I tell my wife all the time, like I have told her for years, she just found out this is not the policy at the club, but I said, hey, I can't use the phone on the course. When in actuality, we can use the phone on the course, but unbeknownst to her, I've been operating under that rule, made up rule for 6 years, just so she won't call me when I'm playing. I don't want to be bothered when I'm playing golf. It's the one place. Leave me alone. That's my salvation.
There's a club that I am an out of town member at where the phone actually is like a forbidden thing, and people take it seriously. When I went there, I was like the rube that didn't know any better. I pulled the phone out, and I might as well have just pulled my pants down. Like I might as well have been like, you know, like could you not be a disgusting animal and put your phone away? I was like, whoa, like, now I know.
Are you saying there would have been less of a reaction if you actually pulled your pants out?
Actually, at this club, it would have been. They wouldn't have blinked.
That's funny.
They'd have been fine with that. Just put your friggin' phone away.
That is so great. All right, I will let you get out of here. I know you got to run in a second. Before you do, though, so now we have a date here. I'm going to come up. We're going to make a mess of SportsCenter at night. I'll do it with Stanford Steve, without Stanford Steve. I got to press you, though, because I know you played Augusta, right? And I feel like, see, my wife has this thing. She says, John, you think everyone's your friend, and I'm not certain they think that they're your friends. And so if she were here, I would tell her that me and you are friends. I don't know how you feel about that. Do you feel like we're friends? We've only met once in passing, but do you feel like we're friends or?
Sure. Is this where you asked me to play Augusta again?
Well, listen, because you brought up, you know, your dream foursome, and I started talking about my dad, and we got nostalgic, and I think you've played Augusta, correct? Several times, I'm assuming?
Yeah, I played.
So, listen, my dad, like, I think the first time I asked you, my dad was like 72, and now he's getting up there. He's up to like 78, so he only has so many rounds left. I just feel like you're the guy best suited to get this done, to get me and my dad on Augusta before he passes away. And so, you know, I'd love to play with you, but I will tell you this. If the choice is, okay, like if only one of us can play, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to tell dad to go to hell, okay?
Okay, well, hold on. I'm trying to just look at this, what we just did there. We played the friend angle, the nostalgia angle,
yeah,
the dad getting older angle, but then at the end, it's if dad can't play, dad can suck it because you need to play. Is that where we landed?
Stupidity. Yes.
Noted. I know some people. We're going to be there in a month or two, and you know, I'll see. I'll kick the tires on some things and see if we can line up. All right.
All right. You kick those tires. I am telling you, I am coming this year with my father. So listen, I can't. I apologize in advance for what it is he's going to say to you because the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Like if I don't get this done, Scott, he's going to try to get it done himself. Okay.
Okay. Well, I mean. All I can tell you, I know the right people. I mean, but that doesn't mean that I know the right thing to say to the people. You know what I mean? Like it's a tricky dance, but I'm willing to dance for you because you're my friend.
Well,
I
appreciate
you're going to come host a show with me.
I will absolutely do that. I would love that opportunity. Will Stanford Steve get jealous? I didn't even think about that. I mean, forget about Levitard. Yeah, who cares? Will he get jealous?
He wouldn't blink.
And nor should he. He's absolutely
secure. He knows who he is. He knows his role. He knows nobody's coming for that chair.
I love it. I wanted to play a game of phone poker with you, like the five most impressive contacts in our list, but I think we don't have enough time. We'll do it next time that you come on, or we'll do it up at Augusta when we're playing. But I wanted to play because I think you would. I think you would beat me because one of my five would be you. So I
no,
think you would.
if I'm one of your five, then you just lost. Because that's not an impressive list. I mean, I've been at this for 20-something years. I mean, the phone. We got a pretty good phone.
All right.
Well, next time,
let's do phone poker. Excuse me. I will only tell you that you probably be in my five, but I'm top heavy, Scott. Like I got LeBron in there, so I'm top heavy. Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a tough one, but I got Tiger. So those two okay.
Right.
All right. So that's your ace. I just played my ace. I got more aces.
Yeah, but my ace is a flimsy ace, and I'll tell you why, and I'll let you go on this note. I have LeBron's number from when he was down here in Miami. I have no idea if that fucking thing is still working. Zero.
All right, you know for an absolute fact that athletes' phone numbers are, like, that's always the scary thing when you text a contact that was an old one. This is a true, and I know, I mean, if we got to go, we got to go. But this is actually funny because I had an old number for Tiger, and a lady got it, and I left a message thinking it was for him, and she called me, and she mother effed me up and down. I'm like, this is, who do you think this is? I'm like, ma'am, I just want you to know it was Tiger's number, so you can yell at me all you want, but these texts aren't going to stop. They're not going to stop coming because you got a kind of a big person's phone number.
Oh my God.
Was really mad. So I'm just telling you, LeBron's number that you've got is not LeBron's number anymore.
All right, and I'll leave you on this note, a funny story, because I've been at this for 17 years. So you just, like Stanzik, our producer, just happens to have Scott Rowland's number in his cell. He doesn't know how he has it, but he just has it. I have Alden Smith's number. My wife's name is Abby. So Abby and Alden are, like, right next to each other. I was getting a foot massage in New York, and my wife suggested it. I'd never gotten one. And I meant to text Abby, oh, my God, this foot massage, it's better than sex. I texted that exact message to Alden Smith.
Okay, well, then I think you just won phone poker. You had like a pseudo X-rated foot massage text to Alden Smith. That trumps the mad lady that had Tiger's phone number.
By the way, Alden Smith has never responded. Still has not responded. That was years ago.
Thank God.
All right, get out of here, Scott. I appreciate the time. I really do. Love the show. Love SportsCenter at Night. Check it out with Scott Van Pelt and Stanford Steve. We'll have you back on for another round of phone poker.
I look forward to it, and you know how I feel about you guys. I love it, and anytime you need me, you know where to find me, because I am in your phone.
All right, buddy. We appreciate it.
Until next time, be good.
Stupidity. All right, Stanzik, that was a lot of fun having Scott Van Pelt on. I'm a big fan of his. I feel like he and I are friends. I don't know if you noticed there, but a couple of invitations. I am going to host SportsCenter at Night. I don't know whether or not I'll be naked or not, but I am going to host it with Scott Van Pelt and Stanford Steve. You caught that, right? You had that on tape, right? These are all binding contracts?
Yes.
And then he also, it seems like I'm going to play Augusta. Me, my dad, Scott Van Pelt are going to play Augusta. You have that on tape as well, right?
Or just you if you can only get one.
Right. I told my dad to go to hell. I mean, he could say hi to Art Briles when he gets there. So listen, Scott Van Pelt, it's amazing. His career is amazing to me because I believe, I've heard Dan say this before, that Scott Van Pelt has the highest Q score of anyone at ESPN.
What does that even mean? What's the Q stand for?
It stands for quack, which makes me think that I should be number one. And if I'm not number one in the entire country, it should be Elon Musk, because there is no bigger quack than Elon Musk. I tell you that right now. Like, this guy sold us a bill of goods on Tesla. He tell you your car is going to be there in a month. There are people still waiting 17 years to get their car. And once they get them, all they do is drive themselves into trees. I mean, it's an absolute disaster. So anyway, I wanted to play phone poker with Scott Van Pelt. He couldn't do it. But we'll do it next time. And you heard that as well, right? Stanzik, he is coming back for a second appearance and probably a third, fourth, fifth, sixth. And in fact, when I'm gone, just have him fill in, okay?
Done.
So you heard us wanting to play this game, and you know I have zero retention. I don't remember anything. I don't remember the conversation I just had with Scott. But I do remember you blurting out one day. I don't remember where we were, what we were doing. I have no earthly idea. But I do remember you telling me that you had, because when you're in this business for as long as we've been in this business, random numbers just show up in your contact list. I remember you telling me you had Scott Rowland in your contact list, which still makes me laugh till this day. Scott Rowland.
I don't know how you remember that, but right. That was a few summers ago, years ago now. You and Danny Cannell were filling in for what used to be The Herd with Colin Cowherd, and I was producing. Right. We were playing voicemail poker, like the most famous person that ever left you a voicemail actually meant for you. Right. Cannell said Joe Montana. He obviously won. You had Marino. Mine was Scott Rowland, of all right. people, former Blue Jay.
And Cannell, he played the voicemail for us. It was Joe Montana calling Danny Cannell to ask him to hold his clipboard. So let's play our own game. We'll have Scott back on, and we'll play cell phone poker with him. But this is the game. I am going to pull out five random contacts for my phone, and hopefully my five will beat the five that you have. But I have a feeling, I really do, because I don't think a lot of people realize you produced, executive producer of Golic and Wingo and Mike and Mike, and Mike and Mike back in the heyday. So I can't imagine the people that called in. I can't imagine the numbers that you have on your phone, because they got all the guests, we got nothing, right? And so I can't imagine. I feel like you have a stronger contact list top to bottom than I did.
Probably not.
Okay, so how do you want to do this? One name at a time, and then I guess we'll just decide together who is the winner of that hand?
I don't know. It kind of feels like you're making up the rules, so whatever you want to do, I'll do.
Okay, let's go one name at a time. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm pulling out the five best names that I have. I am just pulling out random names, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to start my hand with Adam Lefko. How about that? The Sims and Lefko podcast on Bleacher Report. My friend Adam Lefko. How about that?
Wow. He was actually, I also produced Mina's podcast. He's a recent guest on the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny.
Really?
Yeah, check it out.
I mean, you know what? I'm a little insulted that the only person that hasn't been a guest on Mina's show is me. Yeah?
We'll talk to her producer.
So I have Adam Lefko. Your first card is who?
I just started scrolling up from the bottom when you started talking, yeah. And I got Michael Thomas, Saints wow. wide receiver. Wow. You think he's good at sex?
I think he looks like a guy who's good at sex. I don't know if he's actually good at sex. I'm assuming that he is, but he absolutely looks like a guy who is amazing at sex. Am I wrong?
No.
All right. I feel like you're off to a pretty good start there. You have Michael Thomas. I have Adam Lefko. All right. Here's my second name. Okay. I don't know if you have this contact. It's the toughest contact at ESPN to get, all right? You might not have it, even though you produced a show for 15 years. I have Mike Greenberg.
Whoa.
Greeny. Yeah, I have Greeny. All right, so I have, right now, I have Lefko and Greeny. What do you got? You got Michael Thomas and what?
I kept scrolling up. I got Darius Rucker, Hootie.
Wow. And who's making a comeback? You know that, right?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I'm going to go see them. That's going to be fun. So you have Rucker and you have Michael Thomas. By the way, Michael Thomas, I mean, feel free to get him on the f***ing show whenever you want. Okay? You have the number. I don't.
Yeah, I'll text him.
Okay. When? I want to talk to him about sex. All right. So I have Lefko and Greeny. Okay? Again, just randomly pulling out. I feel like you are winning so far.
It's close.
Okay, it's close because Greeny really evened out the score there, right?
Greeny's huge.
All right, so I am going to go just randomly here. I am going to take former kicker and current CBS special teams analyst Jay Feely.
Okay.
Feely.
All right, Feely. All right. Yeah, decent sideline reporter.
Yeah.
All right, for my third spot, I'm staying in the R's. Big Ben Roethlisberger.
What?
Yeah, Steelers quarterback.
Is it an active number?
I don't know. I don't know if I've ever called or texted it, but I have it.
All right, Stanzik, I am telling you right now, all right? I can't even imagine. Like, you're blowing me away. I want Roethlisberger or Michael Thomas on the podcast next week, okay?
Okay.
All right. Good?
Good.
We good?
You good?
I'm good.
Good.
Stupidity. All right, so I have Lefko, I have Greeny, and I have Feely. You have Michael Thomas. You have, what was the second name for you?
Darius Rucker, Hootie.
Hootie, that's right. And now you have Big Ben. All right, here's my fourth name, okay? Just again, I'm scrolling through the, I'm just going to randomly stop here. It's like, you know, I'm playing mine like roulette. I don't know what you're doing because you're in Bristol and I'm in my house, but I am just scrolling down wherever it stops. And the closest celebrity is the guy I'm going with. I am going to go, oh, how about this? Former Dolphin quarterback, former Jets quarterback, former Dartmouth quarterback, I believe, Jay Fiedler.
Whoa. At first, I thought you were going to say Chad Pennington, who is significantly more famous.
I know.
But okay. I'll tell you what. All the guys on your side, pretty big noses.
Greeny doesn't have a big nose.
He used to until he got a nose job.
What?
You didn't know that?
No. Hold on a second. Stop everything we're doing, okay? Including this hand of poker. Greeny got a nose job?
Yeah. It was like the first thing he did before he went on TV.
Get out of here.
He talks about it all the time.
Like a nose job. Listen, this is one of my best friends, and I had no idea about this. You mean like the first time he went on TV at ESPN or just first time in general?
I think first time in general, but he always says he got a rhinoplasty, so people don't know what he's talking about. That's a nose job. Whenever someone says, have you ever broken a bone in your body? He says, yes, voluntarily, and he's talking about his nose.
And what's it called? What's the big word he uses?
A rhinoplasty.
That's a heady play. I mean, you know, when you don't want to tell anyone that you said nose job, that you got a nose job, you just say rhinoplasty.
There you go. I'll do my fourth and my fifth. I feel like I'm up, so I'll do two. You can have the hammer.
You're going 4-5.
I'll go 4-5.
Okay.
Cal Ripken Jr.
Oh, wow. Jesus Christ. I mean, the guy played 4,000 some odd baseball games in a row to the detriment of his team. Totally selfish guy, Cal Ripken. But I would like to have him on the podcast, so get him on, okay?
Kind of a compiler?
Kind of a compiler. I mean, when you look up the word compiler in the dictionary, what pops up is Cal Ripken Jr.'s face.
I thought it was Craig Biggio. I'll get to him, but I don't have time to scroll up to the B's.
So who's your fifth here? What's your fifth card?
My fifth? Sergio Garcia.
Oh, wow. Wow. Sergio, Masters champion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he choked at a bunch of other majors, but he is a Masters champion.
That's right.
So, I mean, Stanzik, there's no way I can't win. Again, I'm just going to play mine randomly. I'll give more thought to this the next time we play, because I think the next time we play, there should be stakes attached to it. All right, so here's my fifth. Hopefully this will put me over the top. I have Bob Saget. How about that? Full house. Just got fuller. Stupidity!